from Vermont Public Radio. This is The Frequency. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Abb. It's Thursday, May 28th. Today on the podcast,
I know how to look at $1.50 and basically say I can get one big thing of this with this $1.50, or I can get three small things of this.
First, today's headlines.
Just one person in Vermont was in the hospital with COVID-19 yesterday. That's the word from the health department, which also said four new cases had been confirmed, bringing the state's total to 971. 54 people have died from the disease and 849 people have recovered.
By the end of the week, Governor Phil Scott expects he'll be able to loosen restrictions on public gatherings. Right now, they're supposed to be limited to 10 people. At his press conference on Wednesday, Scott said that could increase to 25 on June 1st. And he also said that indoor dining at restaurants could start up again relatively soon.
So what restrictions are still in place?
Well, one of the big ones is out-of-state travel. People coming into Vermont have to quarantine for 14 days. And Scott said that will remain in place until coronavirus infections in neighboring states go down. Since Sunday, 43 people have died of COVID-19 in New Hampshire and 675 people died in Massachusetts. Meanwhile, Vermont has gone nearly 2 weeks without a new death from COVID-19. And the growth rate of the disease in Vermont is the second slowest in the nation.
Wait, so who has the first slowest rate?
It's actually Hawaii, which, of course, is a series of islands. And it's funny because Scott actually said at his press conference just yesterday, Vermont is not an island. So we have these other concerns of the states that are around us.
Can you hear that bird?
Yeah.
I should probably close that window, huh?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. And so a global pandemic is not, as it turns out, such a great time to try to sell a ski resort. And that could mean trouble for the Northeast Kingdom. The court-appointed receiver who's managing Jay Peak Resort says the pandemic has, quote, substantially slowed the process of selling the property. Jay's been up for sale since its former owners were accused of defrauding investors. The sale had already been delayed a few times before the pandemic, and now it's uncertain when a sale could happen.
All right, now we're going to go to St. Johnsbury, where Ronald Burns lives with his mother. They're both diabetic, and Ron's income has dwindled since the onset of COVID-19. VPR's Erica Heilman met with Ron to find out how he and his mother are getting on, and here's their conversation.
So my name's Ronald. We're in St. Johnsbury at the Community Restorative Justice Center parking lot, and there's a Swiffer in my face.
Ronald Burns lives in St. Johnsbury with his mother, not far from where we met and talked in this parking lot. They're both diabetic, and his mother receives disability. Ron has a part-time job that's been impacted by the virus. They live on a tight, fixed budget at the best of times. Ronald is 26 now, but he was homeless from the ages of 14 to 19. He talked to me about how he and his mom are getting on and what he learned from being homeless that is serving him well now.
We kind of live month to month, so when we get our money towards the beginning of the month, we go shopping, we grab everything we're going to need for the month, and then we only go out after that when we need small things.
Is it fair to ask how much money you're working with every month to get through the month?
Between me and my mom's income, about $1,400 to $1,500 a month.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about how the epidemic, when all of our lives changed, how did it impact your income and also your buying habits?
So my work is very hands-on. I have to touch the things that I work with. So that put a dent in my work. And at the beginning of every month, we do a specific shopping. Like, we always have a list. And the prices have increased, like, exponentially.
Give me an example. The prices for what?
So we could go get 3 pounds of hamburger ordinarily for around $13 and change. And we went to the store 2 days ago, and it was almost $22. Yeah. And we only buy a specific brand of dish soap. One of it lasts an entire month. So we went out to get dish soap, and the entire shelf was empty. There was nothing. So we're having to make more trips because we have to call these stores. and see when they're getting a restock, what day specifically, what time they get the restock. And we don't have a running vehicle right now, so we have to pay for a taxi every time we do this.
And so now both prices are going up, and also the things that you need aren't available.
Yes. We have quantities and pricings mapped out. So when those are both thrown into the fire, so to speak, we have to figure out quantities and pricing all over again.
So you said before that you and your mother both have diabetes.
Yes.
And how, what kind of concern is that causing for both of you?
We have a kind of a fallback if we're not able to eat like the necessary meals a day, and that's sugar and carbs. So we get chips, we get beef jerky. So like we want to make sure if we're broke and we're not able to get to the store, at least we have something to make sure that we're not going to be unhealthy. Okay. Which sometimes the food that we're eating to maintain our sugar levels aren't the healthiest, but it's the fact that we're not getting low blood sugar levels that's healthy about it.
You spent most of your youth bouncing around or homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Does this event or these pretty dire financial challenges compare in terms of just the level of insecurity? What is it doing to your psychology and your mom?
Being homeless, whether you're a youth, young adult, or an adult, it looks like struggling to figure out what you're going to eat. It looks like struggling to figure out where you're going to sleep at the end of the night. It looks like struggling to figure out who you should trust and who you shouldn't trust. Wondering if you leave your things here this night, if they're still going to be there when you come back. It is a constant struggle.
It's a full-time job.
It absolutely is a full-time job. Even if you know that you're safe and you have a roof over your head and you have eaten, you still got to wonder, am I still going to have this place to live tomorrow? Am I still going to be able to eat tomorrow? It is a consistent struggle.
So what do you know that I don't know that you, what's the muscle you have that I don't have that's making this easier for you than it might be for me?
I guess to get down to the nitty gritty, like, I know how to make a meal out of a bag of chips, cheese, and a can of beans. Like, I know how to wash my clothes in the bathtub if I don't have a washer and dryer or any cleaning supplies to wash my clothes with. I know how to look at $1.50 and basically say I can get one big thing of this with this $1.50, or I can get three small things of this with the $1.50. I know how to practice self-care without actually having things to care about my body with, like soaps and hair stuff. I know how to basically be mentally aware and prepared for things that could happen, or I know how to wake up in the morning happy because I know how to go to bed at night happy. I'm a silver lining kind of person. Like, I see a good in a situation, like, regardless of how bad it is. So, it's...
What good are you seeing here?
You don't really have to run into any crappy people because there's so much social distancing.
Ron and his mother used to go out once a month for dinner, but it's not in the budget anymore.
Me and my mom have this thing where we go out once a month. We're kind of stuck between Chinese and pizza food unless we go to an actual fast food restaurant. We would budget it because we make sure that it's financially doable. But having it be affordable, there's never been more of a struggle right now to make sure that we can afford something. So, but it's definitely something I miss. It was a gift to ourselves, essentially, to be able to get something that we don't usually have.
This is Erica Heilman with VPR.
And now, Henry, we're going to hear another conversation. This one's between me and Erica. Here, listen. So how did you meet Ronald Burns?
I met Ron through my friend Bess O'Brien, who is a filmmaker, and she is working on a project. It's actually a theater piece. She's talking with teenagers who have had experience with homelessness. And so somehow she and Ron hooked up and she introduced me to him.
How long did the two of you talk?
I don't know. I guess probably about an hour, I would say. We couldn't, because, you know, it's impossible to find, well, you find yourself in all these weird circumstances with people talking during this pandemic, and he doesn't have a car, and there's nowhere quiet in St. Johnsbury that's outside that we could think of. So we were sitting kind of huddled in a parking lot behind the community justice center, and I was in my car, and he was sitting in a lawn chair outside my car. So it was a pretty funny setup.
He was in a lawn chair?
He was in my soccer mom chair. I have a soccer mom chair in my trunk that I hauled out for him.
One of the things that I'm still thinking about after hearing your conversation with him was when you asked him, what do you know that I don't know?
Yeah.
Why did you ask him that?
Well, he had been homeless from 14, I think he said 14, what did he say, 14 to 19?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not even just an assumption, it's just true that spending those formative years homeless, he learned a lot of things that I never learned because I never had that chapter of homelessness. So I was just curious to know what he knows that I couldn't possibly know. And what of those skills is he employing now during this time of this pandemic, just because people are needing to be more resourceful perhaps than usual.
Did any part of his answer to that question surprise you?
I don't think it surprised me. It broke my heart a little bit, you know, that a 14-year-old kid was out there learning that, how to, you know, wash yourself when you don't have anything to wash yourself with, learning how to make a meal out of, what would he say, chips and something. Those are survival skills, but they're not ones you hope your 14-year-old is learning or has to learn. But so no, I don't think I was surprised by his answers, but it took me a long time to explain to him what, in this regard, or in this particular question, what do you know that I don't know? He did not know what I meant for a really long time. I think the first thing he said was what comes up in the story, which was the Cheetos, you know, making a meal out of nothing example. And then I think I had to say, look, there are like 18 more things just like that, that you know so well that you don't even know to articulate to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's true about people, is that they, if they know something like the back of their hand, they don't consider it knowledge anymore. It's just, they don't consider it knowledge, or that it isn't important. That, I think that's maybe part of it too. It's like, no, in fact, it is important. These are important things that you know that I don't know, but it took him a while to identify them.
Because of how much of a part of him they are, and that
exactly.
Makes it hard to see.
Right, exactly. It requires some teasing apart of oneself from oneself to see those things.
When you were done speaking with him or done interviewing him, did you, when you said goodbye, was there anything that you wished you had asked? Like, did you walk away wishing you'd asked him anything else?
I guess I didn't go in with a real clear idea of what I was trying to do with him. And I think by the end of the conversation had a sense of what the story was going to be and what was most interesting to me. But I think particularly how close to the bone people are right now, that you know exactly how much the particular dish soap that you buy is. And that if that changes at all, you have to redo your budget. That when you can't do the shopping when you can't be certain that it will be there the way that you need it, that the things that you need will be there, you might have to get another cab to go back to the store, and that's going to cost another $10. Like that's important. And that's, everybody needs to hear those stories, because those are our neighbors. Like that's all of us.
So, Henry, that's Erica Heilman. And what she was saying about people knowing things that she doesn't know, that's something that I think about a lot. And not just because I'm young, I think that I'll always feel that way. Like, I hope I do. And it was also funny to talk with her because she and I have heard each other's voices before. Like, she's listened to this podcast and I've heard her stuff. but we'd never actually talk to each other.
Yeah, I know, that's a funny phenomenon to actually have that conversation. I've had that with some of the Eye on the Sky guys when I've talked to them in person, and you hear those voices every day, you know, on VPR, but then to actually have a conversation with someone that you hear all the time, even as someone who does radio and audio stuff, it's always very strange. Speaking of the Eye on the Sky forecast, let's look at the forecast for today. Increase in clouds. There's a chance of an afternoon shower and highs in the 80s.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thefrequency@vpr.org. We had reporting today from Erica Heilman, Peter Hirschfeld, Amy Kolb-Noyes, and Liam Elder Connors.
Our music is by Blue Dot Sessions, and our executive producer is Mark Davis. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you tomorrow.